Hello and welcome to We the People. Most people believe that the single biggest crisis confronting India today is the state of the economy. Against the backdrop of the hotly debated increase in the price of petrol, one that has quite predictably triggered a political storm. On We the People today, we're taking a larger look at subsidies. Subsidies is one economic philosophy that seems to divide public opinion down the middle. On We the People today, we ask whether subsidies are really pro the aam aadmi or are they in fact dragging the economy down. Let me start with you, Manishankar Iyer, if I may. When you step back and you look at this debate, let's start with fuel subsidies. Where do you win on it?
I stand exactly where I stood as Minister of Petroleum, where I adumbrated the doctrine of equitable burden sharing, that any time there is a need owing to the rise in crude prices abroad to raise the prices of our regulated petroleum products, then the first to take a hit should be the upstream companies who earn rentier profits. Secondly, the downstream companies who must also take a hit and not attempt to cheat people into thinking that under-recoveries equals losses. Third, the central government. Fourth, the worst category of the lot, the state governments, who refuse to do what they prescribe this the central government should be doing. And last of all, whatever is the residual burden that the consumer should take. And in doing this, we must recognize that the kind of consumer of petrol is different to the kind of consumer of kerosene, and that there are two intermediate products, diesel and LPG, where there is too much of the subsidy going to the rich who can easily afford to pay the full price. I would particularly urge a really swinging tax on diesel cars and a complete ban. Now that, of course, will cause people like my friend here to go through the ceiling. But I would say a complete ban on SUVs. I know
a ban
the
on
minute
SUVs.
You ban a ban on SUVs, yes.
Sunita's agreeing and Surjeet hasn't
India,
yet gone through the room.
Tata's from India, Mrs. Clinton from America, David Cameron from England will come and play the pressure on us. And they've got plenty of acolytes here who say it's wrong economics to indulge in all this. But my point is that while there is scope for rationalizing subsidies, there is none for giving it up. As long as this country has a billion poor and vulnerable people, there is no scope whatsoever to just do away with subsidies. The one subsidy I believe we should give up immediately is tax concessions to the 3 crore people who pay direct taxes.
Okay, buddy.
I think that is criminal.
That's a number of different points in that statement, including banning SUVs. And Surjit Bhalla is still sitting quite calmly and hasn't yet gone through the roof. Surjit Bhalla, this is actually, in a sense, where the debate gets sharply divided. Because it isn't that people don't agree on the problem, but they disagree on the solution. Now, what Manishankar Iyer is saying is, given the economic inequities, how can you even argue that market forces should determine the responsibilities of a state?
Well, both you and Mani might be quite surprised, actually, that I don't like SUVs. and if you will, you know, there are appropriate ways of, if you will, not banning, but taxing. And
so you'd support a higher tax for those who drive SUVs or diesel cars?
I think so, yes. Yeah. Okay. It's nobody's case, whether you call them market or whether you call them Marxist or whatever. It's nobody's case that any economy in the world runs without subsidies.
No. So it's which subsidies do you need and which subsidies do you not?
And then how do you adjust for the fact that you're paying for those subsidies? There are good subsidies and there are bad subsidies.
So what's
good
a bad
taxes,
subsidy?
Bad subsidies. I think Mani has mentioned several of them, LPG, diesel, petroleum. And then we can go on to food subsidies also, whether in urban areas do you need it, etc.
So you believe, give me a second, Rajiv, you want to add to that?
One example of a bad subsidy, which is probably shocking, which is kerosene subsidy. Because out of the 10,000 crore that you give as subsidies, 9,000 crore goes for adulteration of other fuels.
Absolutely.
No poor person ever uses kerosene any longer.
That's not true.
Absolutely true.
It's completely untrue.
Yes.
No. Kirit Parikh, it was your committee, in a sense, that first recommended the deregulation of the petrol and oil sector. Kerosene subsidies, let's take that. Because what happens is that debates get trapped in good politics and some would say bad economics. Is it bad politics, bad economics, or is it good politics, bad economics, or is it good politics, good economics?
No, I think kerosene subsidy is necessary as long as people in rural India need kerosene for lighting. If you cannot provide them electricity, if they do not are not connected, even if they are connected, they do not have electricity, they need to use kerosene. A subsidy can become a good subsidy in terms of its intentions and objective, can become a bad subsidy if it is poorly implemented. If 35% to 40% of the kerosene gets diverted into adulterating diesel, we spend 20,000 crores to make Euro 3 diesel or Euro 4 diesel, and then let it be adulterated with kerosene. That makes no sense. You know, while one supports the subsidy, there is no solution available.
There's too much pilferage along the way.
With the downside of it.
Rajiv, would you accept that argument that the problem is the implementation and not the subsidy per se? Or do you believe that the subsidy per se, or there are some subsidies in themselves? And we seem to have a consensus here on the subsidy on diesel, for example. Do we have a consensus?
What?
No.
Consensus
diesel
on
is consumed by the rich.
No. A consensus on it not needing to exist.
No.
I
think
no, we don't. No, we don't. There isn't a consensus.
No. I'm saying don't give a subsidy on diesel that is consumed by the rich.
So have a differential standard
there.
There
has to be a differential in terms of regions as well as purposes, as well as those who benefit from it.
All right, Rajiv.
First agreeing that there are merit subsidies and there are non-merit and bad subsidies, and certain subsidies are absolutely essential. Now, let me then first start off by saying our subsidies have grown from 44,000 crores in 2002-03 to now 216,000 crores, a growth rate annually of 32% when our tax incomes have gone up by 9% per annum. Mm. That's the rate of growth of subsidies. Now, what happens with these? When these subsidies grow, they, of course, crowd out all the other necessary expenditure from the fisc. Yeah. So as a result of which, you get 1.3% expenditure on GDP on health, while subsidies consume 2.4%.
So you're saying, let me just understand what you're saying. You're saying we aren't actually spending in the areas that need more expenditure.
Because you're playing a populist game, it sounds all very well in rhetoric, but the fact remains that there is only that much money to go around. And you can tax the rich to the hilt, and we have had in this country 97% marginal tax rate. That hasn't produced the goods. So this whole question of addicting people to subsidies, which are wrong, by giving all the fuel subsidies that you're doing, even to diesel for trucks, you have reduced the share of railways in transporting your goods, and the roadways have taken over.
Okay.
Now, is that what you want in this country?
Manvindra, Kirit Parekh is making the point that this differential standard that money thinks is essential can never be implemented. That is his experience, that, you basically tax the rich guy who drives the SUV, but let somebody poor who needs the diesel go through without that. Is that a model that could work? Because Mr. Parekh says it can't.
Well, I think the country has become more sophisticated in terms of its data collection. And data is more real that other than what it used to be earlier.
So it's easier to distinguish on the basis of...
It is easier to distinguish. And I see no reason why those two posh petrol pumps on Racecourse Road should be, having diesel, which is, so much cheaper than petrol. Have a village barrel point, which is where the main consumer of the, the poor villager, the village barrel point is not even a petrol pump, it's a barrel point. Just monitor the use of the barrel point. So there's no pilferage from there. And, let these guys pay in this urban area, let them pay the normal market price.
But Barkha,
yeah.
I really think the subsidy debate needs to be taken into this context, because I think today's subsidy is for the rich in the name of the poor in
this
country.
Give an example.
Diesel car subsidy. Let's be very clear today.
But that we all agreed on.
No,
I think we all agreed on that.
No. If we all agree on it, then why don't we get a tax for it?
Who drives a diesel car in this audience? Does anybody drive? Manvindra and the gentleman sitting there.
Well, he's saying he's rural.
I don't drive it, but I'm driven in it.
You're driven by a diesel. This is so you wouldn't mind a higher tax on...
Raise the price of diesel.
Raise the price of diesel.
My office that gives it to me.
Why are we meddling in every little thing?
But this is where the disagreement begins.
Yeah.
Because let's be clear. Yes, it may be needed to raise the tax on diesel, but it is also very clear that there are users of diesel which will require some amount of targeted subsidies.
Yeah.
Either you have differential systems that can work, or you will still need to keep the price of diesel lower. So in that context, Why are you allowing what is clearly an abuse? Because I'll be clear, the economists sitting in this room would like to hide behind the rich and continue, or hide behind the poor and continue to subsidize the rich.
Okay, can
speaking
I get
yourself or for the others?
No. For you,
who do you mean? Who do you mean?
I mean.
Okay, you're all speaking together. So first Surjeet, then Rajiv.
I just want one little statistic we put out. Over the last 5 years, the price of paddy, price of rice, has doubled. The price of diesel has gone up 20%. So even the poor farmer, and mind you, it is the rich farmer uses diesel, not the poor farmer. I think his is a good proposal if it can be implemented. Yeah. I do not know. But this idea of, okay, this is a good subsidy, this is a good diesel, and I will put a subsidy there. That's a bad car, and I will put a tax there. Please.
So you don't think No, do you think yes?
That is how we have messed our economy up. Planning and intervention.
Okay, just one second, Rajiv. I just want to ask this gentleman who does drive a diesel car, and unlike money, is not lucky enough to be driven around in one. Would you be willing to pay more for your diesel?
Definitely, because I am a product of political taxation. Because politicians are using it not as an economic or fiscal tool, they are using it as a political tool.
Absolutely.
And I'm a city middle class. Oh, the worst creature to be on the earth is to be an upper caste middle class citizen.
Yeah.
Because
the taxation.
Like you're a middle class person. Yeah.
The taxation. You know, I was saddened by Delhi's taxation regime that, they did provide some relief on petrol.
So hang on, you're being contradictory. You want you're willing to pay more for your diesel or not?
I would.
You are.
If there is a consistency in policy, and if I see the misuse is not there, I am willing to pay the double the price.
Okay. Now, I don't know how many people in this audience are actually going to be willing to not complain about the higher prices in petrol, but Biraj, go ahead.
Yeah. First, as he says, he feels persecuted that he's a middle class. He must know that by the Planning Commission's own admission, a third of India in rural areas and a fifth of Indians in urban areas live on less than 25 and 32 rupees a day.
Yeah.
Now, so this we are a desperately poor country. Let's not forget that.
Absolutely.
If you look at our spending on healthcare, on education, on the social sectors, it's one of the lowest in the world. We do.
Rajiv's argument is that more isn't being spent because of subsidies.
No, let me just
argue. You have to be very careful.
Okay.
State expenditures.
Rajiv's argument. Let Biraj just finish.
I'm talking about state expenditures.
Quickly, Biraj. Yeah.
The subsidy that we should really be talking about to start with in a program like this is a 5,20,000 crores in tax exemptions that's given to the corporate sector.
Absolutely.
Why are we not talking about that?
Exactly.
We have given away, as Professor Amartya Sen noted in January.
I will let you respond.
Biraj, you've put the figure out there. Now, let's hang on. Is this a problem today? The middle class is a bad word. Corporate is a bad word. What's not a bad word today?
I don't know.
Both are bad words.
People by the name of the poor is not a bad word.
Yeah.
Okay.
The poor are the real people of this country.
Yes.
And anything that is done for them is good.
Yes.
Anything
that's 90% done of the population.
For the FICCI members has to be looked at with deep suspicion.
They are
the ones who drive the growth of this country and give employment.
They are the ones who believe
the politicians.
Okay, let him speak. Now he let you speak. Let him speak.
Barka, yes. This 5,25,000 crore, and I must say Professor Amartya Sen has done a lot of disservice here by quoting that figure in his annual lecture in Pune, is a figure put out by the budget. Soumya Ghosh and I had pointed out that out of this, 1,98,000 crores is excise duty exemption on mass consume items, just for starters. 1,34,000 is duty on exports which are not exported.
Okay, I'm also raising my hand. Can I just get Shankar and then I'll come to you? Shankar, one of the things you have written is that the real austerity is in reforms. Now, for money, reforms might be a bad word too? Reforms? Economic reforms?
Dodgy word.
Okay. Shankar,
There is no good economics or there is no bad politics. There is only good governance and there is bad governance. This is a country which has 500 million people who don't eat twice a day. We spend 6 lakh crore rupees
on various schemes and it still doesn't reach people. So we have real governance issues. You need to figure out what are the items on which you're going to offer subsidy, what is the quantum of that subsidy, and who will get this subsidy.
So what is your example of something on which subsidy should not be offered?
Well, to start with, this mass consumption at items that Rajiv is arguing about on corporate subsidies, I think there is a look, people should relook at all the subsidies that goes to customs, to excise, to personal income
gold
tax, to corporate tax.
150,000 crores in the last 3 years.
I'm agnostic, but is there any study which I am willing to be corrected by Surjit or Rajiv, which says that X amount of subsidy leads to this amount of growth? We have had this problem about subsidies for 20 years, but we are like Alice in Wonderland, where the Cheshire Cat is being told by Alice that I don't know where to go, and then the Cheshire Cat tells Alice that if you don't know where you want to go, any road will take you there. So governments after governments for 20 years have been doing this.
All right, Blunderland. Surjit.
Yeah, look, again, let's just try and respect facts. And I just want to know two facts that came out from there and from here. One is that according to the Planning Commission's own admission, that they are 30% poor. And then you said that there are 500 million people who don't have two square meals a day.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that the NSS survey on which the Planning Commission just let me finish.
No, Surjit.
Also has a question and has had this question since 1983. Did anybody in your family not have two square meals a day? That number is down to 2%. Okay? Maybe 5%, maybe 7%. So please, I will refuse to discuss. So you guys can come up with numbers. And you can imagine your numbers here.
Same consumption expenditure data tells us this.
Okay, Sunita, I
don't know where this debate is going. Because are we trying to say this country is not poor?
Exactly.
No, according to one set of numbers, they are about 30% poor. That translates into, by the Planning Commission's own admission, about 400 million poor.
Okay.
Let's bring it back to focus. There are 400 million poor, according to him. According to him, there are 500 million people who do not have two square meals a day.
The dispute seems to be on which areas can the government actually cut back spending on and which areas does the government need to spend more. Before I take it around the panel, Manvinder, just as a politician, you've worked in Barmer. How difficult is it when you see elections that are often fought and sometimes won on what Rajiv may believe is a populist slogan, Manishankar Iyer may believe is a valid slogan? For example, you had Punjab, where when you had Manpreet Badal try to argue about lifting power subsidies, he lost. You still have the free rice, free television syndrome in Tamil Nadu. How difficult is it politically?
It's not just India, but in a democracy anywhere in the world, when something is given, it's very difficult to take it back.
True. Yeah.
People expect it as an entitlement.
So you agree with Rajiv that there is a subsidy addiction?
In 1994, the chief ministers of all the Indian states agreed for a minimum tariff on power of 50 paise. And that was something that came back. So it's not impossible. And then there's been a regression back again. And Dr. Manmohan Singh was the finance minister. So I think, people realize a rational argument. If you tell them that the diesel...
Why are politicians so insecure about taking that argument to the people then? Why do you think that is? Because
it's much easier and it's also it's lazy politicking. Because it's much easier to just offer them
Sunita, would you support a lifting of power subsidies to farmers who may be able to afford today to pay for that power?
Yes, I have no problems with lifting the power subsidy for farmers. But that means you start giving farmers the right price for the food that they grow. You let the food that they grow get the price of power, water, input, labor be factored in. Today, the big problem that you have in this country is you have very large numbers of people which require food subsidy. We need to keep the price of food low because we need to procure large amounts. So the person who is worst affected is the farmer. Then we tell the farmer, you're subsidized. Where does the fertilizer subsidy go? To the farmer or to the company?
Okay, I have to take a break. I do have to take a break. Manvinder, you want to quit?
The farmer does not get electricity 24 hours a day.
Yes.
You give him 24 hours a day. It's his choice when he wants to water his field, when he doesn't want to water his field. he doesn't have a problem paying higher rates.
Because he
doesn't have guaranteed power.
Barkha, this can live with the fact that you have lifeline subsidy for power, which is that people consuming less than whatever you decide will still pay subsidized tariffs for electricity. That's done in every possible country.
We've got to take a break. When we come back, we seem to have a little bit of a dispute in how to define who's rich. Also, let's look at food subsidies. Since we do say that some sort of spending by government, some subsidies are necessary, we'll come back to that and your questions after the break. Welcome back to We the People. We're looking at subsidies. What are the areas where it's time to lift subsidies and what are the areas which actually need more spending? Before we return to our panel, let's get some questions from the audience.
Yeah, I want to ask, like, what use is that power subsidy when in rural areas, over a period of time, a farmer gets hardly 1 hour of power supply? He spends more on generators to generate power.
Okay, that's an important point. Let's take a question here.
Yeah, I think all these subsidies are absolutely useless if they don't reach the proper people. There are hordes of grains rotting in our storage. They are not having proper storage system. What is the use of giving those subsidies? I mean, they are absolutely on papers. They are not reaching the poor people. We are so pro-poor, as our minister pointed out. Are we really pro-poor? We are not, because whatever legislations, whatever subsidies you bring out, they are actually going in the hands of all the upper middle class and the middle class who are living
in... Since you've referred to middle and upper middle class, I just want to do a quick straw poll here. Those of you who actually support the hike in petrol prices, I imagine most of you drive petrol cars. Those of you who support the hike in petrol prices, raise your hand. Okay, many, many hands supporting it. And those who don't...
No, you should have a caveat also.
Okay, those who don't. I'm seeing those who don't. Okay, what's the caveat, Shankar?
The caveat is that the money that is raised in the hike in prices should not go to government's taxes.
So you're saying the people shouldn't be paying...
People should pay the price of a product, not for the inefficiencies of the government.
But so it's okay to hike it, but it depends on where the money is going.
If the petrol is costing X amount, let's pay the X amount.
Okay, why do you not support the hike in petrol? Can't you afford to pay a few rupees more, is what Manishankar Iyer would say to you?
No, I wouldn't say that at all. It's not a question of supporting this extra amount. Can we get an assurance that it's going to be diverted to the right cause? And I think many are asking that. Thank you.
Okay, you want to act?
It's actually quite baffling. I mean... Punishing the middle class, the middle class which has actually accelerated the growth of this economy for past 10 years, for the political and economical inefficiency of a government which has failed to take any economical reforms in for past 3 years.
Okay, Bunny, be kind to her. She's sitting next to you. Be kind to her.
So I won't answer her point.
You're not going to answer her. But she's wrong.
As Bunny most likely knows, Rajiv Gandhi in 1985 had first articulated this very point, and he had put a number on it that only about 15%.
Actually, that's a lie. He had not said that.
Let him finish.
He knows all the facts, so I think
let him finish. Let him finish.
And when he's swinging in the wind, then we give him an
answer.
Okay, Surjit. I don't want to divert the attention to.
So let's come back to food subsidies. We're going to look at food subsidies.
But Rajiv Gandhi in 1985 said, or may have been 1986, but basically first pointed out. And Kirit has worked on a paper on that in 1994 where he cited that, and everybody else has, that basically only 15% of the money meant for the poor actually reaches the poor. How he got that number, we do not know. But it turns out a lot of empirical estimates.
Okay, Kirit Parikh.
I had looked at the NSS data and analyzed that, and it did show indeed that not more than 20 paisa, almost in any state, reached the poor. Of the total expenditure of the government on that, it's in most states less than 15%.
I just want to make a point. I think the larger debate here is the fact that the middle class India, today two people have reflected that view here. It's a view that you would hear pretty much in the U.S. from most of the Republicans, that we don't want to pay taxes because this will tax the government and the government is inefficient. Now, that's clearly not a... the issue that will sell well in India. We need the middle class to understand that there are huge issues where the middle class will have to pay more. Okay. I'll give you my favorite mother of all subsidies, parking. The fact is, each one of us who owns a car does not pay for the price of parking that car.
Yeah. Okay, that's an interesting example.
Let's be very clear about this. I want to focus
a little bit on food subsidies because I think that there is a general agreement here that where people can afford to pay, there have to be ways found to make them pay. So let's try and take the debate beyond that. Yeah. Food subsidies, clearly an area where people can't afford to pay. Rajiv, let me start with you. The food subsidy bill is something you've written about. You've said it's fiscally not viable.
Well, if you introduce a food security bill where the government will have to, you know, will have to provide food, you know, at lower than cost, you know, at for 60% of the population, that's what fiscally not sustainable. 6 years ago, members of FICCI had suggested to the finance minister that a smart card scheme that will mean that a poor can have a smart card with a sort of entitlement there and could buy the entitlement of his food at a subsidized rate. A simple, straightforward solution for the, you know, for nobody in the government accepted that, because there's a whole gravy train which is, you know, linked up to that, and they're not interested in getting the poor the, you know, money for the food that he deserves.
Manvendra, food subsidies.
I think people who are deprived of nutrition have to be given food at cheaper rates, because there are far too many people who are deprived of nutrition. You look at the malnutrition rates in the younger children. It's a shame that this country today has the kind of malnutrition rates that we have. Also, there's also a requirement of improving the delivery system. I think the smart card is an interesting idea. There is a smart card already in existence of sorts in the employment guarantee scheme.
Yeah.
They already made a smart card. They're getting money. The NREGA payments are coming through that
card scheme. Would you support NREGA?
Oh, of course, yes, I would.
Of course.
I think we know that
50% of the people below the poverty line actually do not have a targeted BPL card. Food subsidy doesn't reach them. I think the only effective way to give them subsidy is to use a smart card scheme and make it even universal if it is necessary, but do it in a way that you can clearly identifiable rich can be excluded out of that.
Shankar, the Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme, before I take that to Mani and Surjeet, is something that has also been hotly debated. Some people have said you're not creating employment, this is a kind of a dole.
It's explicitly stated, described in the Act as a dole. So what is the argument here?
You have is it creating employment? Is it creating self-reliance?
It's a dole.
It's not a dole.
It's not a dole.
It's a dole for which a poor person has to toil very hard.
The other confusion here is we are constantly confusing with the diagnosis and the prescription. The diagnosis that India needs a certain kind of state intervention. Manvendra spoke about malnutrition. Every year, 2 million children die before they reach 5. And that's the kind of shocking thing that we are saying. Yeah. So again and again, we are saying smart card, this solution, that solution. Let me give you two instances. In 2003, the Planning Commission itself found that only 42% or 43% of the grains in PDS reached the beneficiaries.
Yeah.
What did we do about nothing? In 2006 and 7, the Finance Minister in the budget said, we will produce an outcome budget of how much of our spending reaches what. Do we know anything till today? This is 2012. Nothing. So we are going round the mulberry bush here.
Okay, Biraj.
Just two points quickly on the food issue. Let me give you a very good example of a very bad subsidy that we are now going to introduce in food. We are going to subsidize exports, which means government, the Rangarajan Committee has recommended 3 million tons of food grains need to be exported out. International prices are low. Government of India will pay the differential to the exporters. Now, that's the example of a bad subsidy, because our food grains abroad is going to be consumed by cattle. We are willing
But our food grains are rotting here as well.
So distributed to the poor. There's nothing stopping this government from doing that. And on the PDS, the experience, the evidence on the ground is very simple. And the evidence is those states which have universalized it or near universalized it have the best performing PDS. Take Tamil Nadu.
Yeah.
This argument that the rich will grab the food grains, look at the NSSO data, 70% of the top quintile does not take their food grains.
All right, Surjeet.
First, we are all very upset with malnutrition. And the question is, are we more upset with food rotting with malnutrition? That's point number one. Point number two, why is food rotting? It turns out that paddy farmers in India, rice farmers in India, get the highest price in the world. So they need a subsidy in order to export because you are paying them to your minimum support prices, the highest price in the world, in dollar terms, not in rupee terms. Money, you can look at me and do what you want, but look at some numbers.
That's not right.
Third,
that's
third, the rich Punjabi farmer is the last person in the world who should be subsidized.
They're directly subsidized.
The rich Punjabi farmer is the last person in the world who should be subsidized. And fourth, in Narega, it turns out they had an explicit question on Narega in 2009-10, asked of all the households. And it turned out that two-thirds of the people who availed of Narega were in the top third of the distribution, of the consumption distribution.
Not possible.
Okay, Barkha, you feel it's not
so
possible.
So much for it reaching the poor, and you have to toil very hard. It's an extremely corrupt scheme. Yeah. And
actually,
last point,
if you think this is
politically very, very friendly, we have to look at the record of the Congress in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. They've lost every election.
But money, the Narega, Surjit feels it's a corrupt
there
scheme.
There are lots of points.
Okay.
And Surjit we can come to, as he well deserves at the end. The fundamental point is the one that was raised about Rajiv Gandhi's remark, which, to correct his history, was made in 1989 and made on the basis of a report prepared by Ajit Bhattacharji of one single program in the state of Bihar. And what he said there was that 85 paise of any of these programs is going into bureaucratic expenses. Yeah. He said, therefore, instead of using the bureaucracy to deliver this, use the Panchayat Raj system to deliver it. It is significant that all the economists and representatives of vested interests who are here, they all point to what's wrong. Not one of them has given a constructive solution to
smart
it.
Card.
The constructive solution.
Why, Manu?
No, that's smart card. I'll come to the smart card in a minute. I'll come to the unsmart card in a minute.
Even we have the advocated Panchayati Raj and empowerment of the poor.
Yeah, come on, let's focus on the subject.
I insist that if you have a proper governance system which is village people centric, then, for example, in Chhattisgarh, you have an outstanding PDS system because it's run by the women's self-help groups and not by baniyas under the charge of the local panchayat.
Okay.
In Tamil Nadu, Karunanidhi promised rice at 2 rupees a kilo and delivered it at 1 rupee a kilo. Nobody complained that they didn't get the rice.
Okay. I'll let Rajiv come in there. Rajiv, give me a second just to get a couple of questions. Bihar has been spoken about. Cash transfers, direct transfers of subsidies is something we haven't looked upon yet. But your question, are you from?
I'm from Bihar. Yeah. My question is, sir, that we have now all consensus that the poor have to give subsidy, and the rich have to not give. So how do we divide? What's the definition of poor? Poverty. How we draw poverty.
So, आपके वो ही कि वो ही नहीं settle हुआ कि गरीब कौन है, अमीर कौन है? आपका सवाल?
Firstly, I think this whole argument about, and it's made day in and day out, that, you know, subsidies suffer from a lot of implementation problems, and that is made the basis for arguing then that then let's do away with it. And, you know, this, the very same people who make this argument often also make the argument for bizarre schemes like cash transfers and smart card. We live in a country where the poor struggle to get even ration cards,
and we live in a country where
the poor, because they lack any kind of ability to get documentary evidence of the fact that they're poor, you expect the same people to procure smart cards and then smartly use them to get nutrition. I think that's a bizarre idea.
Yes. Let me take this to Rajiv Kumar, because while he was very critical of the cash transfers, Nitish Kumar's model has seemed to be so successful that now a Nandan Nilekani headed committee wants this to be uniformly applied, centrally applied, based on the Aadhaar card.
Because the evidence from countries which have practiced cash transfers is that this is a much better way of directing subsidy to those who are the real beneficiaries. And despite all the argument that I've heard, the smart card is a much better idea because it's a value, it's a sort of value loaded card which you can use. And the UID scheme is finding in states like Andhra and in Karnataka and in Tamil Nadu that there is 100% duplication of the ration card that you hold.
Come back to that gentleman's question.
How do you distinguish between who's rich and who's poor, who can afford it and who can't?
But that is, so what Rajiv says begs the question as to who is going to be entitled. Now, Mr. Bhalla is completely content with the Planning Commission saying that 30% of our people are poor.
all poverty lines are drawn completely arbitrarily. And unless we recognize that a huge proportion of our population who are not regarded as poor by the Planning Commission regard themselves as vulnerable, and they are, and they are the ones towards whom some of these things go. The Economist calls it wastage and leakage. The politician who is running a democracy, after all, which is our single biggest achievement, recognizes that the people of India do not accept the estimates of the
Okay, but I need to come back to the point right here. But can I ask you, and then
very quickly, now two things.
No, I have a question. Yes. And my question is this, that cash transfers or direct transfers have been embraced or in the process of being embraced, but you have a problem with them.
Absolutely.
If you have a problem with them, I go back to what Manvendra said at the beginning, that today technology has permitted us to make those distinctions.
Yes.
Aren't you shunning technology
here? No, we are not. Firstly, the same technology has also advanced in delivery of food grains. If you look at the experience of states which are delivering well on the food grains, they're using technology. They're using GPSs and trucks to monitor.
But why is
the
food
issue? No, I'll tell you. Let me just complete.
Preferable to cash transfer.
Okay, let Viraj complete and then I'll come to you, Kiran.
Firstly, let's recognize that cash is fungible unlike food. That if you give cash, it has multiple uses and that can be misused. Number one. Number two, over the last 20 years, we've crippled our rural banking infrastructure.
So you don't think it's workable?
Bank transfer is not...
Can I just get him to respond and then I'll come to Sunita. Then I have to take a break after that.
It is really not possible.
Viraj.
It has not been possible for us to identify the poor. I think what he's suggesting is that...
You're saying we can't identify the poor?
We are not.
Then how do we implement any scheme?
So that's why the more or less a universalization of scheme has really worked a little. I'm saying that yes.
So you're saying you can't do these differential schemes.
But I think
schemes.
We can clearly identify some of the rich. And we should have a universal scheme with excluding clearly identifiable rich people. And that way we can really reach them. And I think once you've done
that's
that.
That's an interesting model.
Once you've done that.
Yes.
Cash transfer is far more effective and far more efficient.
So can I recap what you're saying, sir? Can I recap what you're saying? You're saying it's impossible to really identify the poor. It's easier to identify the comfortably rich.
Right.
Exclude them. Yes, that is a simpler model. Sunita, do you agree?
Well, I think just to go back to this debate, I think we should be open to every way in which we can target subsidies better. I have no problems with cash transfer. I simply think it hasn't been tried out at the scale that we are putting our faith into it. But we should try it out. We should experiment with it. We should look at smart cards. We should look at ways in which we can exclude the rich, which means certainly ban diesel cars, because that's definitely...
Can I just take a question from gentlemen here? Yes.
My suggestion is subsidy should increase for those who are eligible. एक नरेगा का सवाल उठाया है. नरेगा सिस्टम फेल्योर है वो भी, और उसमें एक कमी रह गई. एग्रीकल्चर एक्टिविटीज ऑन प्राइवेट फार्म शुड आल्सो बी इंक्लूडेड इन द एक्टिविटीज ऑफ नरेगा अपार्ट फ्रॉम द
आई जस्ट टेक दिस टू सुरजीत एंड द क्वेश्चन द लार्जर क्वेश्चन इज सिंपली दिस एंड आई थिंक दैट्स व्हाट ही सेड टू दैट यू कैन नॉट मेक इंप्लीमेंटेशन the argument against subsidies, or poor or faulty implementation, the argument against subsidies.
No, it has to be implementation. I mean, look, we all believe in everything should be good, all people should be happy, etc. There's no disagreement on that. The disagreement is on how it is implemented. Now, I want to come to the cash transfer scheme.
Yeah.
So you can't evade this. I don't buy this notion that you can identify the rich and the well-off and you can't identify the poor, because one is the mirror image of the other. So I just don't buy
that. Not done
but
it.
I want to bring out on this cash transfer scheme. In 1994, in Mexico, joined the NAFTA agreement, a lot of farmers could not grow corn anymore. And they decided that they will give them cash for not growing corn. And there were many people who thought they will drink wine or whatever they drink there, and all the money will go to waste, it will go to consumption, etc. This is the origin of the cash transfer scheme in the world. 80% of the money they received was invested. Now, the cash transfer is the rage in all of Latin America, all of Asia. I want to ask a question. Yeah. What is so special about us
that we can't do it?
Gentleman's question about... You don't know the people. You know how many mobile phones there are, how many mobile phones the poor have. I mean, and in every household now, there's somebody literate in every household today.
Manvendra, are cash transfers doable? I find Kirit's argument a little interesting, which we'll explore. But are cash transfers doable? Or
I said it earlier, cash transfers are already happening in NREGA payments.
Yeah.
You have to improve that system. It is already happening.
Let me just give you an example of a cash.
One question here and then Viraj. Yeah.
Well, I got only two quick points to make. One, I want to contradict what Mr. Manishankar said earlier. I want to tell you that only 30 to 35% of kerosene, which is supposed to be given under PDS to BPL people, reaches the actual people. I worked 45 years in the oil industry. Remaining all goes for adulteration. If Mr. Manishankar Iyer hasn't seen, I will take him to a petrol pump early morning at 5 o'clock and show him that 2,000 liter of kerosene will be mixed in a 20,000 liter petrol tank. 20 rupees a liter maximum you will pay for kerosene and you will sell at 75 rupees a liter. Yeah. That is one point
I want to say.
The government's view on the economy, you know, could be summed up in few phrases. This is what I just wrote. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps mounting, regulate it. If it stops, subsidize it.
Absolutely. Right. Just one quick point.
Money, and then since he addressed his question to money, I'll let money first point. Yeah.
The problems that he's mentioning are extremely well known. Yeah. And therefore, under a scheme called the Jan Kerosene Pariyojana, we succeeded in getting the GPS system that he's talking about installed, and we were able to sharply bring down the extent of diversion that was taking place in the trucks. Where the system failed was that the civil supplies departments of the state governments were unwilling to relinquish what was a remunerative source of revenue for them to the panchayats. Yeah. You bring in Panchayati Raj in the genuine and full holistic sense of the constitution amendments, and 80-90% of these problems will simply
be... I'll allow you one point.
You see, when you talk about LPG subsidy, this is one subsidy which has no meaning whatsoever. Is Bangladesh richer than us? What is there any subsidy there? Let anybody tell me, other than India, anywhere in the world, and I have traveled quite a bit in the oil industry, show me one country where there's an LPG subsidy.
Okay.
When they tried to stop the kerosene subsidy, it caused two young executives of murder.
Viraj, quickly, I've got to take a break.
Look, firstly, we've had a cash transfer program called the National Old Age Pension Scheme, which has been running for the last 26 years. If cash transfers are so miraculously good, why aren't they working?
Why hasn't the PDS worked? Sunita is saying, why wage an ideological war on cash transfers?
Absolutely. A quick break.
Then when we come back, let's explore a little bit what Mr. Parekh says in last remarks. It's easier to exclude the rich than to create a gold standard for defining who's the poor. Do we all agree on that? Last comments after the break. Segment on We the People, everybody agrees that for the successful implementation of a subsidy, it has to be targeted. So what should be the model to define who really needs it? Let's take some questions from the audience.
Can we not then identify the address as the dividing factor between the rich and the poor?
The home address?
Yes.
Okay, that's one thought. Let's take another question.
We seem to all agree that there's bad implementation all over. I don't think so. Tax evasions to the corporates in the country are being beautifully implemented by the finance minister's own admission. You know, direct tax revenues are almost half that of indirect tax revenues, and nothing seems to be done in that direction. So this whole notion that implementation may problem, I think we really need to sit back and think about it a little more.
That's also bad implementation.
We are talking about providing subsidies to the poor, but what is a long-term policy for the poor to remove this subsidy makeup? Like, if the dollar will appreciate tomorrow, then we will again rise the price of the petrol.
If you read the first page of the approach to the 12th plan, you will find that the annual average rate of growth of our economy over the last 5 years, it says, was more than 8% per annum. If you read the last paragraph on the same page, it says our rate of poverty alleviation over the last 11 years was under 0.8% per annum. The fact of the poor is going to be with us for a minimum of 100 years and probably for nearer 200 years.
Okay.
And please remember, we are running a democracy. And in a democracy, everyone has the same vote. But alas, everyone doesn't have the same number of notes.
Okay.
And therefore, we must have social justice not just economic.
Can I just come in there? We've heard the perspective from Fiki. We'll now get a perspective from the CII president as well. But let's take a one question.
How do we guarantee the same amount of food grains being delivered to the poor as it is That's delivered to the richer people?
So That's we come back to that question. How do you define the poor? Is it easier to define the rich? Before I take last comments on that, Mr. Adi Godrej now joining us. Mr. Godrej, the debate here is quite heated and it divides itself down the middle on what the responsibilities of a state are to its citizens and whether some subsidies are therefore absolutely essential or whether we have, as Rajiv Kumar here has said, a kind of subsidy addiction.
Barka, it's extremely important that subsidies be contained. The economy and the government cannot afford these subsidies. And the worst part about subsidies, it leads to distortions in consumption. So, for example, when free electricity is given to farmers, electricity tends to be wasted. If nitrogenous fertilizers are heavily subsidized, they are over-consumed. This is well known in economics that subsidies lead to distorted consumption. And if today we do not subsidize many of our petroleum products, our petroleum consumption would come down, people would be more careful in consuming petroleum products, our import bill would come down, the rupee depreciation could be averted, and there are many economic benefits that can accrue if you contain subsidies.
Can I ask you, Mr. Godrej, that you've been watching the American elections as well, where there is now a proposal, and it comes up again and again, it's coming up in this program as well, about making the rich pay more. Why do the rich get away easily? Why not higher taxes on the rich? As a moral argument, it would find many supporters. Where do you stand on that, Adi Godrej?
Barka, it is known all over the world that if you tax the rich too much, they tend to invest less, create less jobs, which affects the common person. So taxation should be sensible. Taxation should provide an incentive for the investor. Taxation should allow people to grow. We had taxation running to almost 90% income taxes. At that time, we grew at 2 and 3%. When we've reduced taxation rates to reasonable levels of 30%, our growth rates are much higher.
The last question to you, what's the one subsidy that you think should be scrapped immediately?
Well, I think all subsidies should be avoided. And even if there are subsidies, when the costs go up, the subsidy should not be allowed to increase. At least there should be some price increases. So at least the subsidies are contained. Now, I'm glad that the government has announced that they want to contain all the subsidies to within 2% of the GDP. And I think we should work on that. Some subsidies are worse than others. So, for example, a subsidy on diesel, which is so huge, is again creating a lot of distortion. Yes.
All right, on diesel is the one cars. Thing, or diesel cars that we all agree on.
No, he doesn't.
Let's start with it. Let's start.
He doesn't.
Okay, you're all speaking together.
Money. He did not say to us that he objects to stimulus. What is stimulus except subsidy to those who are doing badly?
Okay.
And the stimulus given in the last 5 years is 21 lakh crore rupees. That's gone largely or at least about 60%.
Can we come back to point? Can we come back to point? What is the way to identify the rich and the poor? Yeah. Surjit, last comments there.
The poor will always be with us. How in Germany they define the poor is if you are one-third the median income. That means you'll always have 20, 30% poor.
Okay.
And that's good. There are various ways.
Do you think Kirit's model can work? Identify the rich
instead
of the poor.
I disagree with the Kirit model. Most of the time I agree with him. But I think that's just obfuscation. There are many methods. There are surveys that can be done. There are localities that you can choose.
But he's speaking from his experience in planning commission and saying it's almost impossible.
80 districts of India contain about 80% of all the poor in India.
Okay.
Subsidize everybody.
Okay, I'll come to Mr. Parekh Shankar.
I think what Kirit Parekh has said is the probable logical approach. Identify the rich, make the schemes universal. Who will do this identification? Who knows whether you're rich or poor?
So identify the rich?
No. Who knows whether you're rich or poor? The people in your community.
Absolutely.
So let the panchayats decide. Let the local people decide.
Absolutely. Viraj, last
time. I think that is a workable model. But let me end with giving you an example of a really bad subsidy, which the Maharashtra High Court had to strike down and it's a 24 crore subsidy on just one head of entertainment tax that was given to the IPL. You know, 24 crores given to Mr. Ambani, Vijay Mallya, Kirita, and Shah Rukh Khan.
Yeah. Okay, Kirit Parikh.
But I think the top 30% or maybe 25% of the rich can be clearly identified. You can use many, many indicators.
So throw them out of the system and universalize the schemes. Manvendra.
I think it's easier to identify the poor because you know what kind of assets this family has.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bullock cart or it's a Scorpio.
But money?
There are categories of poor. And it was Arjun Sengupta who suggested the categorization of the extremely poor, the poor, the marginally poor, and what Kirit was pointing to, the vulnerable. Those who, if anything goes wrong, would tumble below. Secondly, we should remove this expression poverty line. It should be called the destitution line. And equally, for those above the poverty line, we should have categorizations.
Rajiv.
Today, the system of subsidies that we have distort prices, encourage wrong consumption, spoil the environment mostly, and distort the economy and spoil the fiscal situation of the country. What you need to do is to change that. If you transfer that to public education and public health, it'll be much better, much
and
better
more
targeted,
and more
only
much
if
more
it
mild.
Goes to the panchayat. Only if it goes to the panchayat.
Sunita, you said you want waging an ideological dogma in a
Absolutely.
Sense of this debate. Where's the middle ground?
I think the middle ground is very clear. The middle ground has been said by a lot of people in this room that we need subsidies, we need them to be well targeted. But I think what we've missed out today, we think of the subsidy somehow going to the poor of India. But actually the subsidies go to the rich of India,
exactly.
to the middle class of India. And I think that needs to be articulated more and more because those subsidies need to be weeded out, need to be removed.
Okay, I've got to end here with that thought. I think nobody can disagree with that. Wherever you stand on subsidies, they have to reach the right people. And it is a scary thought how much we're spending on subsidies when we can't even seem to agree on how to define those who really need them. That's perhaps where energies should be focused. Let's leave it there. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.